from the era that brought you names like Chamberlain, Russell, and West.
To Chamberlain, he's got it!
Jerry West made it from the other side of the midcourt stripe!
To the glory days of Magic and Kareem.
And Magic Johnson is out there celebrating!
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is on the brink of an NBA all-time record.
From a time where last-second shots were expected.
Here comes Kobe from way outside. Got it!
Gets it to LeBron for three for the win. Yes! LeBron James!
And rings were handed out like candy.
Now one. Here's Jordan. Yes! It is all over. The Chicago Bulls have won.
It's Duncan Dynasty with your host, Garrett Bouguet, and it starts right now.
Welcome to another episode of Duncan Dynasty. I'm your host, Garrett Bouguet, and with me this week, I've got a very special guest. He's a fellow sports business classroom alum. You can follow him on Twitter at @_Darius. He's a big-time Orlando Magic fan, and you could also, you may have seen him on the previously aired NBA TV show GM School. Darius Scott is here to join us. Darius, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Garrett, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm. To be honest, this might be the series I'm most excited to talk about because I do watch a lot of Cleveland Cavaliers basketball, and I know you watch a lot of Orlando Magic basketball.
Yeah.
So I thought you'd be the perfect guy to have on for this discussion. So just quickly to go over some of the raw numbers for these teams, a lot of this info I'm getting from Cleaning the Glass. Cleveland finished the season as the Eastern Conference 4 seed, going 48-34, 18th on the offensive end, 6th in defense, and 13th overall in net rating at +2.6. Orlando finishes just one game behind Cleveland at 47-35, 22nd in offense, 2nd in the NBA in defensive rating, and also just one behind the Cavs in net rating at 14th at +2.4. So Darius, before we get into like kind of the X's and O's of this series, the first thing that I wanted to bring up was the whole like final day of the regular season. There was a lot of a lot of possibilities of where these teams might end up, right? Orlando,
right.
I think the highest they could end up was 5, but they could have ended up 8th with a loss to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
So they obviously had a lot to play for. The Cavs could have finished as high as 2 with a win, and they were up 10 on Charlotte in the fourth quarter of their game. And J.B. Bickerstaff put in basically 5 centers all at the same time to intentionally lose that one to face the Orlando Magic. So, I mean, as a Magic fan, and I'm sure some of these Magic players, they got to be looking at this going, oh, they wanted this smoke?
Yeah. I'm watching that game, and I'm thinking, I was like, is that Imani Bates playing point guard? And
he was the only guy that could even dribble.
Yeah, and like Tristan Thompson's running pick and rolls. I was like, this is the most epic of tank jobs I have ever seen. But I got to think, if you're the Magic, you got to be extra hyped that it's just like, oh, you wanted to play us? All right, we're gonna show you what it really is.
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing I especially, you know, I can understand the logic of like, yeah, we'd rather play an inexperienced team in Orlando in the first round than like someone like Philadelphia with Joel Embiid, right? Like, I get that, but at the same time, the lack of ambition where it's the focus is more like, let's just win one round as opposed to let's try to go as far as we possibly could. Because as the 2 seed, you get home court advantage in the second round, right?
Right.
And you also would avoid the Boston Celtics in the second round as well. So this really, like, that's the thing that frustrates me the most from a Cavs perspective is it's just like, this was a move to say, like, we just need to win one playoff round and that's all we have our sights set on.
Yeah, and like that's like I kind of took that into account when I'm like thinking about this series. It's like this team just like, is their heart even in it? Because like a lot of this comes down to like, are the players good on the court or not? But then it's just like, yo, like how bad these guys want to like really want it? Like, they had a chance to beat a number two seed and just show everybody how good they can be. And it's just like, nah, we're going to try and dodge the Sixers. Because, like, I mean, at the time, you didn't know if it was going to be the Sixers or the Heat. And it was like, nah, we're just going to duck Joel Embiid and we're going to go to the Magic. I like, that's just real. It's a real sucker move. But hopefully, yeah. Hopefully they get what they wanted. But I don't think it's going to be an easy test.
No, and yeah, that's the, and we'll get into it, because I do not think it's guaranteed that the Cavs are going to just run away with this series. Yeah. Like, again, the Magic are second in the NBA in defense. This is a legitimate defensive group. And that was really what, beyond like giving up the thousands of offensive rebounds they gave up to Mitchell Robinson in the playoffs last year, the big reason the Cavs failed in catastrophic fashion last season was they couldn't score. And this Magic team is going to make it really, really difficult. And so let's quickly go through some of the regular season matchups. These teams played three times. On December 6th, the Cavs won 121-111. On January 22nd, behind Sam Merrill hitting eight threes, the Cavs won 126-99. And then the most recent matchup, on February 22nd, no Donovan Mitchell in that game. The Magic took care of business, 116-109. But, you know, the other thing with Cleveland and, you know, why they struggled so mightily in the second half of the season, and frankly, Orlando had their moments of struggling as well down the stretch, which is why they nearly fell back into the play-in after being a team that they had a chance at home court advantage. But, you know, the Cavs were, I think, largely struggling in part because Donovan Mitchell was out for an extended period of time. And then even when he came back, he didn't necessarily look right. He was starting to look better towards the end of the season. And I imagine getting an extra week off between that final regular season game and the playoffs is going to do him a lot of good. But also for Orlando, a guy like Jonathan Isaac, who I'm sure we'll talk about plenty in this episode, is getting healthier and healthier as the season has gone along, and I believe played maybe his season high in minutes in that regular season finale.
Yeah. It was. I actually had the chance to go to the Sixers when the Sixers and Magic game. It was the second to last game of the season, and because of Wendell Carter, he had some kind of injury, or whatever.
It was during the game. Like it was a back issue, like back spasm.
It was a back thing, and he left the game. So Jonathan Isaac stepped in and played more minutes than he normally does, and he held up extremely well against Joel Embiid, which you would think that Embiid just, you know, runs through everybody, and Jonathan Isaac actually did pretty well against him. And I think that gave Jamal Mosey the idea that maybe we should throw him in a starting lineup, because in that last regular season game against the Bucks, they threw Jonathan Isaac in the starting lineup, and he gave Damian Lillard probably some of the most trouble I've seen all season. He was just everywhere. And I'm thinking, if you give this guy this many minutes, it's going to muck up a lot of things.
Yeah, and Orlando's already a team that plays really big with Franz Wagner and Paolo Banchero at the three and the four, both of those guys at like 6'9", 6'10". Throw in Isaac at 6'10", and even potentially another center out there. You're just enormous. And then, you know, beyond that, Jalen Suggs, if he's your guard, he's pretty big and he's got a long wingspan for a guard and one of the best offensive players in the league. Again, getting back to, you know, I talked about how the Cavs just got absolutely smashed on the offensive glass in that series against the Knicks last year. So I was curious what your take was on this. Orlando, this season, seventh in offensive rebound rate. The Cavs actually, you know, I think a lot of people thought that their offseason acquisitions were mostly focused on being able to space the floor, which, I mean, they were. Strus and Niang, those guys are floor spacers. But also those guys are underrated rebounders as well. And the Cavs have gone from last year, they were 20th in defensive rebounding, to this year, they're 7th. So I wanted to get your stance on what you've seen maybe from these matchups and from the Magic all season long of, do you feel like this is a scenario where they can do something similar to what Mitchell Robinson and the Knicks did, where they just smash the Cavs on the boards?
I think the Magic have the opportunity to do that. they are an extremely physical team, and they're going to bring it to you. The I would say, like, on the defensive end, the defensive glass, the Magic are going to, I think they will take advantage of the Cavaliers, just because I don't think Evan Mobley has shown me that he's ready for, like, that level of, like he doesn't have that level of offensive game where he's going to be able to take over a series like that, especially a team as strong defensively as the Magic. And I don't think you look at Jared Allen as a guy who you're going to go to get, like, a lot of points. So I think from that aspect, like, when you think of, like, Wendell Carter, Jonathan Isaac, even, like, Mo Wagner, he's a tough guy. He's, like, I wouldn't say, like, he's going to do a lot in the series, like, but he'll come in and give you a few minutes, and he's going to be tough. Like these guys are going to bang. And, like, from what we saw last year, I don't know if we're going to get the same level, or if we're going to get much, much different than that.
Yeah. I feel like Orlando, you know, doesn't have just that one guy like Mitchell Robinson to absolutely just, like, grab 15 offensive boards himself, but they do it more as a collective unit. Right. And you said it,
it's going to be a team. Yeah.
Yeah. They are very physical, and, you know, we'll see how the Cavs react, because the Cavs just couldn't handle the physicality of the Knicks last year. Again, like, this isn't the same exact team. They've added new pieces, and hopefully, you know, if you're a Cavs supporter, that they've learned a little bit from that experience and have grown from that and gotten a little tougher. But the Magic are going to test that for sure. One thing, like, looking at the looking when Orlando has the ball, of course, Orlando, despite the great defense, they really have struggled to score the basketball, in part because they don't have a lot of shooting out there, despite, you know, Jalen Suggs making some improvements. But, like, Franz Wagner's kind of struggled from three. Paolo Banchero, that's not what he really wants. Wendell Carter Jr. has shot well, but he doesn't shoot it with a ton of volume. So Orlando, really, what they try to do and what they did to get to at least 22nd on offense is just attack the rim relentlessly, right? The reason I think a lot of people, and maybe the Cavs in their own front office, thought this is a good matchup is that with Allen, with Mobley, you've got two of the best rim protectors in the league. And so the Cavs this season were third in opponent shooting percentage at the rim. Teams shot just 62.8% at the basket. And Orlando takes 38.5% of their shots at the rim, which was the most in the NBA.
Yeah, and, like, just going back and watching some of these earlier season matchups, it's, like, obviously, like, the Magic, like, they just cannot shoot the ball at all. So they know that. We know that. All they're trying to do is get to the basket. And I think it was the first meeting, at one point they were down, like, 20 points in the second quarter. And I'm noticing this because everything they try to do at the rim, Allen or Mobley are there defending everything. Then they kick it out and nobody's making a shot. And that's going to be, like, the key thing to the series is, can Paolo and Franz make their mid-range or threes, or even, like, Wendell Carter, can someone make a three to try and open it up so that Franz can get to the basket, which is, like, what he wants to do, or Paolo can get to the basket, which is what he wants to do. Like, can they start making shots to bring these bigs out the paint? Because as of right now, they don't really have a reason to leave, because it doesn't look like anyone's going to make a shot.
Yeah. And the other interesting thing, just from a matchups perspective, is, you know, again, and I think one of the things that makes this Orlando team, you know, not only good now, but a big time threat moving into the future, is, like, it's similar to the Boston blueprint, right? If you've got two big, really talented wings, that's tough to deal with. There's not too many teams in the NBA that have multiple guys like that. So, like, if you're the Cavs, and especially in a scenario where it seems like Dean Wade, one of their better wing defenders, is out at the start of the series, and I don't know if he'll come back at all. You know, they've got, like, an Evan Mobley to deal with a Paolo Banchero, which I think that's a, you know, pretty good matchup. Yeah. There's not too many guys I'd rather have than Evan Mobley. But then, like, who's guarding Franz? It's probably Max Strus, who is an improved defender. Strus. He plays hard, but, you know, he's probably losing about 4 inches and maybe 30 pounds. So it's like that they will have, Orlando should have a matchup advantage with one of those guys, but it is also a matter of like, can those guys hit enough, as you said, mid-rangers, and can they space the floor to the point where, yeah, maybe you get by Max Strus, but if Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are just hanging there at the basket, it doesn't really matter.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, that's like when I was thinking about matchups, I'm thinking Strus is going to guard Franz, and like, yeah, he has the quickness to stay with him, sure, but Franz has a big size advantage. But Franz, like, his game is either I'm getting to the basket or I'm shooting threes. And I think for the season, he's shooting about 20% from three, which is, I think that's well below what he can actually do. Yeah. But there's a reason why he's there's a reason why his numbers are like that for the season. He just hasn't hit it. So I'm sure, like, Max Strus is, I don't know if he's going to give him shots, but he's going to, like, you can shoot. And if you want to drive, we're going to gladly usher you right into Jared Allen or Evan Mobley, where, you know, it's probably not going to be much success there.
Yeah, and going to the other end of the floor, I think an interesting matchup. Obviously, Jalen Suggs is the star perimeter defender for Orlando, and my guess is they would throw him on Donovan Mitchell to start this series. And, you know, they often will start Gary Harris as the other guard, you know, who's not too shabby defensively himself.
Right.
But, you know, this is going to be another big series to test, like, okay, what's, you know, if the Cavs fans are excited about this core, this series is going to be a good example of like, okay, we've got something to be excited about, or, you know, maybe this is just not going to work, because I think Evan Mobley's going to have his hands full dealing with Paolo and having some offensive responsibility. He's going to have to do stuff on the offensive end. And then Darius Garland, if Jalen Suggs is slowing down Mitchell, making things difficult on him, Darius Garland has got to step up.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be a test to see if, like, how healthy Donovan Mitchell truly is right now.
Yeah.
And because and like, Jalen Suggs is probably the last guy you want to try and test your health against, because he's a menace on the ball, and like, he's going to be fighting over screens. He's one of the best in the league at that. So if Mitchell is, you know, slowing down a little bit, like, Garland's got to, you know, deal with Gary Harris. And if he tries his drive game, like, he's running into, like, these other big bodies that are in there. Cause once you get past, like, if you get past Gary Harris, you're running into 6'9", 6'10", Paolo and Franz, and maybe Jonathan Isaac's back there, which, I don't know, it's going to be rough on these guards. And I think that's the key to the series, is, like, how well they perform against, like, the pressure of the, or, like, the defensive pressure the Magic are going to put on them.
Yeah, and I think the other reason, and really the only way you end up second in defense in this league, is that you've got to have some versatility to be that good. And I think both of these teams, both teams' big men have some versatility to be able to switch, to be able to show high, to be able to blitz. And like, speaking of things that we learned that the Cavs the Cavs guard struggled with against the Knicks last year, was dealing with the blitz. And I think Orlando also, their big men with Wendell Carter Jr., especially someone like Jonathan Isaac, if he gets some minutes as a small ball five, they have the bigs with the mobility to run those sorts of things. And in a 7-game series, you know, maybe you win one game because the blitz is effective, even if they make adjustments and figure it out. Like, taking one game because you're able to show them 3 or 4 different looks can make the difference.
Yeah. And I think Jonathan Isaac, I think he's going to get huge minutes in this series. Cause I think they're, like, at the end of the season, starting him against the Bucks was partin' because, like, Brook Lopez isn't a guy who's going to punish you underneath offensively. And I don't see Jared Allen or Evan Mobley being that guy who's going to punish them. So it doesn't hurt you to give Isaac big minutes. And then that allows you to play any defensive coverage you want if Jonathan Isaac is out there. And you can trap the screen, you can blitz the screen, you can do anything you want with Jonathan Isaac, and it's going to be Jalen Suggs or Gary Harris on the other side of that. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, and I'm curious to get your take on this, but again, after that Knicks blowout and catastrophe, they went and got Strus, they got Niang, in large part to give them the ability to, if we want to play big, we can still play big, but now we've got the ability to go with, kind of a four-out system with one big out there. In this series, it's interesting because I think against a lot of opponents in the current NBA, I think the Cavs have just been better with just one of the two big men out there. But I think in this series, it might actually benefit them because Orlando does struggle to space the floor and are trying to get to the basket to play those two bigs together more. But I think you could see different types of games depending on what lineups the Cavs are going with, where it's a defensive bloodbath when the two bigs are out there. And then both teams maybe get better on the offensive end because the Cavs put more shooting out there when they bring in Niang. But then also then that opens up the rim a little bit for the Magic.
Yeah, it was like, that's like one of the things I noticed where it's like Magic are down by 15, 20 points or whatever it is. And then Mobley goes to the bench and it's just Jared Allen out there. And now Franz is just probably finally, because he's just going to the rim. And Wendell Carter, he just shoots a couple of shots. He didn't even make them, but he's just shooting them. So now Jared Allen actually has to respect it a little bit. So now it's just George Niang at the rim instead of Evan Mobley. And
that's a small difference there.
For George Niang, for what he can bring shooting, he brings the absolute opposite in terms of defense. So the minutes when it's just one of those bigs out there, the Magic have to take advantage of that because the rim protection, the defense just isn't at the same level for the Cavs when it's just one of those guys out there.
So yeah, one of the prompts I sent you before we started recording was just, and I like to discuss this when it comes to every series preview, but that's just who has sort of the bench and the coaching advantage in the matchup. The coaching thing is fascinating because I don't think you can really argue against what either Mosley or Bickerstaff did this regular season and even last regular season. They've been pretty solid regular season coaches. But Mosley is largely inexperienced, and J.B. Bickerstaff is also pretty inexperienced and also got thoroughly outclassed by Thibodeau last year.
Yeah. So, when it comes to Jamal Mosley, this is going to be his first playoffs as a head coach. So, I wouldn't be able to – because he was on the Mavericks staff before, so I'm not sure what role he plays in, what the Mavericks are doing in terms of their playoff preparation before. So I know he has, some playoff experience in terms of being in the coaching room, but never as a head coach. And I see this for J.B. Bickerstaff as, he's kind of coaching for his job because they've had success, but not the level of success that they want. And Donovan Mitchell, he may leave, he may not leave. There's so many, the Cavs had a lot at stake right now. And I'm sure, J.B. Bickerstaff, he's ready to change things on the fly. He's ready to do some extreme things because not only is he trying to win, he's probably just trying to keep his job. So I'm sure Jamal Mosley is probably going to see things he hasn't seen before as a head coach. And I feel like that makes a difference when it's going to be a tight, or I expect it to be a tight series like this.
Yeah. The pressure that the Cavs are facing, I don't think can be understated because as you said, they've set it as an organizational goal that we need to win this series.
And Orlando, it's like winning this series is the bare minimum.
Yeah, and Orlando really I don't think there was too many people that had super high expectations for them. I think they're over under for before the season was at 37 or something like that. So yeah. I think a lot of people would be surprised that they're even at this point. So it's kind of just all good from here on out for them.
Yeah, the discussion at the beginning of the season. discussion at the beginning of the season was like, is this going to be a play-in team? And they beat the play-in. Like, I mean, almost they were almost in a play-in, but like they're the fifth seed now. So it's like they exceeded that expectation already. And now guys are just happy to be here. I mean, I don't think they're going to play like they're just happy to be here, but I think the fan base and a lot of people surrounding the team were like, yeah, like this is all playing with fool's gold. We're playing with house money now.
Yeah. The other thing that's going to be, I think, you know, Jamal Mosley has a difficult job because I think this Magic team is pretty deep. And in the playoffs, you know, you probably only want to play 8 or 9 guys in a rotation. And so there's going to be some legitimate decisions to make. And not only with like what guys play, but how much they play, right? Like how much does Cole Anthony play as maybe the only guy that can hit an off the dribble, like a pull up, right?
Yeah,
that can be a very valuable skill, especially against the Cleveland defense with the bigs out there. Again, Jonathan Isaac, we've already talked about him, but like, does he cut into Wendell Carter Jr.'s time if Carter Jr. isn't knocking down shots? And it's like, we can get even better defensively if we just play more Isaac, right? There's a lot of interesting decisions for him. And then, you know, with Bickerstaff, without Dean Wade, I don't think there's as many decisions to make, but there's also somebody kind of lower on his bench, like a Sam Merrill, who we talked about had a big game against Orlando. And you wonder like, okay, if Orlando's just not scoring that well anyway, maybe, and we're struggling ourselves to put the ball in the basket, maybe getting a guy like Merrill out there who can really shoot the basketball is actually a pretty decent time to throw him in the action.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting chess match where it's just like, how long do you leave Cole Anthony out there? Do you leave him out there with Donovan Mitchell? Does he play in the minutes Donovan Mitchell's not out there because Donovan Mitchell's just going to go right at him? Do you just attach Cole Anthony to minutes with Jonathan Isaac? Because for as poor as Cole Anthony might be on defense, Jonathan Isaac might actually just clean up everything that like Cole Anthony might do. Or like, do you need a guy to kind of settle things down but make shots? And I don't know, like, do they go to Joe Ingles? Like, I feel like it's possible. I don't personally want to see that, but it's like, he's a guy who's played, he's played value, like he's done some valuable things for them this year. So it's like the matchups are going to be interesting. And like you said, Sam Merrill is like, if both teams are in the mud, why not throw him out there? No one's scoring anyway. And Sam Merrill might like, he's going to shoot 5-6 threes in 5-6 minutes. So.
Yeah. The Ingles thing is fascinating because he's obviously older now. He's really slow. Might be the least athletic player in the entire NBA. Although, you know, him versus George Niang would be a pretty good competition for least athletic guy in the entire league.
I know what that is a great point.
But
that's a great point.
There is an element of like, and I felt this way watching the Golden State Sacramento play-in game, especially in the first quarter. It's like Steve Kerr just needs to put in Chris Paul and Moses Moody, two guys that just our calm presences on the floor, right?
Yeah.
I feel like that's what Joe Ingles can provide. And I feel like that he's going to be in there at some point just because, you know, the playoffs can get hectic and hardly anybody on this roster has playoff experience. Ingles does. He's the vet. And sometimes just having that presence out there can make a positive difference.
Yeah. And like, it can't be understated where, if the offense is struggling, like Joe Ingles, like he can make a shot.
Yeah.
he can easily knock down 2 or 3 threes in a couple minutes and he can slow things down. Not that I imagine this is going to be a super fast paced series, but like he can like calm things down, slow it down, get guys under control. And I think in one of these games, he even got a steal on a fast break, and like he finished by himself, and like the bench was hype. Like he's the guy that gives the team energy and gets guys hype when he does stuff, because I guess because he's old and slow, no one expects him to do stuff, and like that's the kind of thing that can like push the team over the edge.
I know the exact play you're talking about because I was watching. It was from that February 22nd game because I was watching it right before we started recording. And yeah, it was like a Mobley handoff and he just snuck in and stole it. And so, you know, Mobley's kind of trying to chase him from behind, and Joe Ingles just very slowly goes in, nearly misses the layup, which is what I think led to the whole bench like laughing hysterically, because they're like, wow, he almost just missed a wide open layup. But then like the following possession, he comes down and like crosses a guy over and hits a step back. And you're right that like, yeah, it just it really livened up the bench. Yeah, Joe Ingles just I've heard he's a hilarious guy off the court as well.
Yeah, and for some reason, I think like if Donovan Mitchell sees him out there, he's gonna, like they're going. He's just going to think back to his Utah days, and like they're probably actually friends or whatever. So he's just probably going to try and like go at his old buddy, trying to make him look silly. And with the series is close, it's like the margins are going to be so slim. And I just wonder like how long do you leave him out there? How long do you leave like George Niang or Sam Merrill out there? When like they could be the reasons why it's like you lose a couple points within like a minute or two.
Absolutely. All right. So who are some of the X factors? I mean, we've probably talked about a few of them already, but who would you imagine are some X factor guys here that could make or break this series for either team?
For the Magic, I'm going to go with. I feel like he's just so important to the team, so it's hard to say he's an X factor, but Franz Wagner, it's like he has to show up in this series. Like, he has to shoot the ball, and he has to shoot it well. He has to find a way to score other than, like, getting to the rim, because I just find it's going to be extremely difficult to get to the rim on this team. So he's got to find a way to get points, because, like, there's not too many other people on this team who are going to score points. And Franz has to be that guy to find a way to put the ball in the basket, whether it be getting to the line or like actually knocking down some threes. I think that's extremely important. And for the Cavs, I think it's Darius Garland, where I think Mitchell is going to get all the attention, as he should. He's the all-star, he's the all-NBA player. And Garland's going to be the guy that I don't think he's forgotten, but he's the guy who's, you know, like he's also in talks of like if things go poorly this offseason, will he be traded or not, or like will teams inquire about him? And like he's got stuff to prove too, and I think he's in a position where there's not going to be a lot of attention on him. He can knock down some shots, he can try and penetrate and free up things for Mobley and Allen.
Yeah, it's been a really weird year for Garland. I feel like I think stagnating would be too positive of a term for what he did this year. I think he's regressed a little bit compared to even last year.
I think the injuries kind of took him out of it.
Yeah.
He just had some crazy injuries.
There was an element of like last season, I think he actually fit in really well despite it being a big sea change with Donovan Mitchell coming in. But he was able then to, he knew his role in terms of when Mitchell has the ball, I can be like the off-ball rover type of player running off of down screens and floppy action. And, you know, also then when Mitchell goes out, then I'm the guy. This year with Strus coming in, Strus took most of the off ball actions that Garland, you know, was doing last year. So he kind of just ends up standing. And I don't think he ever, and the team itself, you got to blame the coaching staff as well, never fully figured out a way to maximize all three of those guys. And I feel like his confidence has suffered, and you stated maybe partially it could be due to the injuries as well, but like his handle's been a little bit looser. The jump shot hasn't been as effective. You'll see times where he'll just kind of be leaning on his three-pointer for no real reason, and just making the shot more difficult than it needs to be. But yeah, I definitely agree that he's going to be huge. A couple of guys that I noted, and we've already kind of talked about them and why they're important, but obviously Jonathan Isaac is going to be an X factor. He's an X factor for the Magic, I think, every game he plays in. I think a lot of people have been saying that like he might be, per minute, the best defensive player in the entire NBA. I mean, that's how talented this guy is on the defensive end. Cole Anthony, again, like the Magic, there's been a lot of talk about like, what should they do moving forward? Like to me, it's, they need more pull-up shooting and like, especially from the guard position. And Cole Anthony's the only guy on this team that can do that. So, you know, if the Cavs are really shutting the Magic down, I think just playing him a little bit more, even if that hurts your defense a little bit, is probably the way to go. And then, yeah, Wendell Carter Jr., another big one where, as you said, he's capable of hitting threes, especially from the corners. And if he's able to hit enough shots and also be the rim protector, you know, again, speaking to the idea of another reason why the Cavs struggled against the Knicks, when the Knicks blitzed, you know, the likes of Mitchell and Garland, and they passed it to Mobley to run that 4-on-3, it was Mitchell Robinson at the rim stopping that. In this series, it might be Wendell Carter Jr. or Jonathan Isaac at the rim. And, you know, they're a little bit smaller, like height-wise, compared to Robinson. But, you know, they're both pretty good athletes, pretty good rim protectors. So they're going to have a lot on their shoulders dealing with those 2-on-1 situations on the back line after those, in the event that they do blitz on the perimeter.
Yeah, I think Wendell Carter is definitely a good one. It's going to be his job to just, like, do a lot of the little things in the series. And I don't think he's going to get a whole lot of, like, stats in terms of, like, the stats that stand out. But, like, defending the rim and deterring, like, that 4-on-3 offense that like the Cavs might try and employ, just like you said, Mitchell Robinson did last year. Like, that's going to be key. I think, like, another important person is going to be a Caris LeVert, because that second unit for the Cavs, like, when Mitchell or Garland sit for a little bit, if he can come in and give them somewhat of a similar level of offense, I think that could put the Magic in, like, big trouble, because he's going to be able to attack guys like Cole Anthony, or I guess Joe Ingles, or whoever that second guard that comes in for the Magic will be. If he can make them pay, that puts the Magic in a real bind. Because on top of that, like, Jalen Suggs during regular season, he doesn't play a ton of minutes. He plays like maybe 28, 30 minutes at max. So I'm thinking during the playoffs, the Magic are obviously going to jump him up to maybe 35 plus minutes, but I can't imagine it's much more than that, being that, like, he's just a high energy player. So you can't just play him 45 minutes and expect him to be the same level of guy. So I'm sure Caris LeVert will have plenty of opportunity to go against these other guards.
Yeah, that's a great call. And, like, again, if the Cavs, like, if one of their two guards, Mitchell or Garland, are struggling, like, yeah, that's where Caris LeVert stepping in and providing a boost can be pretty big. And LeVert has improved pretty significantly as a defensive player too. Like, that's one thing I think Bickerstaff has done a really good job of, is even Max Strus, I think, is having his best defensive season. Like, he's just he gets his guys to commit to the defensive end of the floor. Plus or minus a Donovan Mitchell. That's still kind of a struggle to get him to commit consistently. And then the only other guy I had as an X factor would be, against Sam Merrill, thinking that, like, you know, yeah, he can't play against everybody, but maybe this is a team, again, if Orlando just, even with mismatches, doesn't score the ball that well, like, boosting the spacing and knocking down threes, and his off-ball movement, especially, like, when Strus is off the floor, that he can provide that, and give the Cavs 48 minutes of that off-ball shot creation. He could be pretty good. All right, so final question before we get into the series prediction. So one thing I like to discuss in these previews is, like, okay, if a team gets down 0-2 for whatever reason, whether that's they're not scoring well enough or they're not defending well enough, what sort of like drastic adjustments could the coaching staffs of these two teams make to, you know, change the momentum and get their team back into the series?
I would say, in terms of the Magic, they are very limited with the different options they can go to, because, like, a lot of their scoring just comes from two guys, and like they're the main creators of the offense, because the Magic start Gary Harrison, they start Jalen Suggs, but essentially Paolo's the point guard. Paolo's the table setter for pretty much everything they do. So I feel like they're like the Magic strength is their defense. And like, if they're struggling with offense, the main substitute you can make is maybe getting Cole Anthony more minutes. And does that mean starting him? And if you're doing that, then you're obviously taking away a lot from your defense. Or do you just go heavier on the defense and throw Jonathan Isaac in there for more minutes and just have him start and maybe lessen Wendell Carter? Like, I don't know how, like, where the Magic turn to for adjustments, because like, there's not a lot this team can do. So I think they're going to struggle from that end. And like, if you look at the, on the Cavs side, if they need more scoring, I think they can turn to like maybe just throwing, or I guess going small and putting Caris LeVert in there and maybe alongside Max Strus and Garland and Mitchell, and going with one of Garland or going with one of Mobley or Allen at center. And like, they can speed up the game that way, get a lot more shots up offensively. But I'm not sure where the Magic go for just like how much they can actually change.
Yeah, that's it's a really good point, because and that was when the Cavs were playing at their best, basically between Christmas and the All-Star break. They were arguably the best team in the NBA during that period. And a lot of that was like, you know, and a lot of that was without Garland and Mobley. And it was just Mitchell, Allen, and shooters, right?
Yeah. So
they have, and like, even the Garland Mobley with no Mitchell and Allen lineups have worked really well this year for Cleveland. So yeah, there are different ways that the Cavs can have some success. And as you said, like Orlando, there's a reason they're 22nd in offense. They don't have a lot of what they could do. To me, like, what Orlando, the adjustments Orlando makes is like, oh, we lost 102 to 100. Okay, let's make adjustments so we can win 91 to 89. Right?
Like, yeah. That's all I'm like, yeah, throw Jonathan Isaac out there to make this an even more, like, makes it an even bigger rock fight.
Yeah. And like, the Magic don't run at all. They're 25th in the NBA in transition frequency. So it's not like they can even though they force a lot of turnovers, they don't get out in transition a lot. So that's an issue in terms of them just not having the chances to score easy points. My only thought for the Magic on the offensive end would be like, you know, if you're struggling with just throwing the ball to Franz or throwing the ball to Paolo and watching them isolate and it's not working, like, get into your offense a little bit faster, run some actions to get them on an advantageous matchup, right? And then go into the isolation. But that's going to require, you know, the coaching staff and the players being attuned to that, because the playoffs are exhausting, right? And it is exhausting to push the ball up the floor and get into your stuff quickly, as opposed to, you know, a lot of teams will fall into the trap of just walking it up the floor, getting into the offense with about 8 seconds. And then you don't have any time to get those matchups that you want to make things easier on you.
Yeah. And I would say, like, the Magic will benefit in the series that their guards aren't your typical point guards. But the Cavs guards aren't that's not the backcourt that's going to pressure them into like a ton of turnovers and a ton of poor plays. So I wouldn't call Jalen Suggs or Gary Harris the best passers in the world, but I don't think Garland or Mitchell is going to force them into bad entry passes. I do think Paolo and Franz should be able to get spots or to the spots to initiate offense. If they do struggle with that, I don't know how they recover from that, because like, this isn't the matchup that, at least in terms of the backcourt, this isn't the matchup that should cause them problems.
Right. All right. Well, let's get into our predictions then. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to?
I'll go first. I'm like, as a Magic fan, I'm trying not and be too biased, because I 100% have a rooting interest. But I do think the Magic can cause the Cavs enough problems, and the Cavs are in a lot of disarray. And I do think the Magic will win this in 7 games.
Okay, I like it. On the Cavs home floor. That's a brave call. I appreciate that. So, yeah, I think it could go either way. I definitely do not think this is just like the easy matchup that the Cavs think it is. I do think out of the teams that they could have played in the first round, this is probably the best option for them.
Yeah, yeah, I will agree with that. Yeah.
But so I'm going to go Cavs in six, but I do think it's going to be a really tight series. And I do think there's going to be some games where Cleveland just is in the mud and just can't do anything. And if Mitchell isn't, you know, an all-star caliber player in the series, that's the other X factor, right? Is that like, yeah, I'm anticipating, given that I thought Mitchell was looking better and better as we neared the end of the season and he's getting this week off, that it's going to be, you know, 100% Donovan Mitchell. But if he's 80%, yeah, I might favor the Magic. It's, you know, it's that close.
Yeah. I think if Donovan Mitchell doesn't have a game or two where he scores like 30, 35 points, then that's not good for the Cavs. Like, I don't think the Magic are going to have anyone that scores like absurdly high, but like, that's okay, 'cause that plays into their hand. But if no one on the Cavs is scoring like in the 30s, like Donovan Mitchell, then I feel like that plays into the Magic's hand.
Absolutely. Well, this is going to be, I believe this is the first game on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern, I believe. So yeah, we're going to get to see this right out of the gates. I'm salivating over here, Darius. I'm very excited for it. Again, you can follow Darius on Twitter at @_Darius. Great guy, great basketball mind. Loved meeting him at Sports Business Classroom. Darius, thanks so much for coming on and joining me.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guy. I appreciate it.